Greetings from BBS Radio, where truth and news still exist in the original form. You're tuned in to The Spiritual Politician, the show that shows you where politics, government, and selfishness went wrong, and how you can take action to make it right. I'm Melinda Pillsbury Foster, your host for this hour of insight aimed at making each of us more responsible, more cooperative, and more aware of the spiritual bonds that connect us to each other, no matter what we find to squabble about in the interim. Now, you can call us toll-free from the U.S. to 877-876-5227. You can call us from Canada to 888-810-8322. Or you can call us direct to 530-876-3222. This show is carried online, and we may also be able to get it on the air in your local area. To find out if one of those old-fashioned on-the-air stations in your area carries this show, just contact us at bbsradio.com. The website for this show can be found on the BBS Radio site and at spiritualpolitician.blogspot.com. All past shows become available as soon as is humanly possible on the station archives. Now, my own blog is titled How the Neocons Stole Freedom, and is conveniently located at howtheneoconsstolefreedom.blogspot.com. My blog this week is on the curious sexual fantasies of Phyllis Schlafly and George Will. Check it out. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we continue to connect the dots so you can see the whole picture and understand how that nasty alliance of government and corporations are working to convert America into a corporate plantation. Last week, we heard from Captain May. The week before that, we heard from Lieutenant Eric Schein. Each filled in lots of lines and supplied more dots for us. This next week, you will be able to go to connectallthedots.blogspot.com and see an introduction to how the big picture, dots and lines, really looks. Doing that is a little scary, but it allows us to see what's really happening, essential G2. Knowing the big picture allows us to choose the alternatives that work to fulfill our spiritual mission and ignore irrelevancies, for instance, the brand of spiritual path we're following. On our show today, we will connect some more dots for you. Our guest tonight has written a book that connects some very important dots we have not previously discussed. And now, from the week just passed, this week, our correspondent in Baghdad, Jane Stillwater, sent in some fascinating reports on what life is like in Baghdad in the Green Zone. See those on the Iconoclast site. Jane is enabling many dots to fall into place as she writes from and I know that the lines she writes will continue to build the big picture. All of us breathed a sigh of relief early this week when the imminent attack on Iran was barely evaded by the release of the British military being held there. But while most eyes have been focused offshore, the powers that be have been busy here in America. Mexican trucking is scheduled to begin operating within the U.S. in just a few weeks. American truckers are being squeezed out so that more profitable goods, such as genetically engineered food, can be carted into the United States, augmenting the bottom line of the major corporations. Past guest Linda Honeycutt, the founder of Warrior Grannies, will be leafletting on that issue in North Carolina this week. So if you're a trucker, get in touch with her. And now our thoughts for the week ahead. By connecting all the dots, we connect ourselves to the truth and to each other in ways that bring unexpected insights. Today's Good Friday. If you're a Christian, today marks the anniversary of the time when Jesus died so that all of us could be connected through him to each other. Sacrifice, loss, grief, redemption, a love that extends our scope to live rightly with those around us. Self-knowledge that allows for no evasions, evoking our forgiveness of others so that we may be also forgiven. That's the message we need to hear and live. However, you experience your relationship with the ineffable is true for you no matter how you do it. Buddhist, Muslim, Wiccan, Jew, Christian, or atheist, you fill in the blank. Each of us confronts ourselves, drawn to understand and to love if we listen. celebrate life. Celebrate Easter. Know yourself ever more fully in this season of spiritual rebirth. And enjoy your Easter basket. I want mine filled with malted milk balls myself. Our guest tonight is Michael Weinstein. Mr. Weinstein is the author of a book that connects some very important dots for us. The title of the book is With God on Our Side, and it tells the intensely personal story of a man's fight to reclaim the values on which America was founded, the separation of church and state. An attorney and businessman, Michael Weinstein is also a graduate of America's Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs. His family has given three generations to the military service of our country. His book connects the dots that illustrate how the fascist tendencies of the corporate state, using the voting blocks constructed from apolitical Christian churches by Ralph Reed and Pat Robertson beginning in the 70s, are being used to move military culture toward fascism. Please welcome Mikey Weinstein. Are you there?
I am, thank you.
Well, I'm certainly glad that you could be with us today. And we always begin by asking our guests to tell us something about themselves. So tell us a little about you, your family, and how you came by the nickname Mikey.
Yes, well, I'll do the last question first. Some of your listeners may remember there was a TV commercial for a type of breakfast cereal, Life cereal, that came out about 35, 36 years ago that involved a little boy that wouldn't eat anything, but he loved the cereal. The little boy's name was Mikey. And my classmates, my first year at the Air Force Academy, decided that was going to be my name. I resisted it for a while, and then Melinda, I just gave in. And now, I mean, I've been called that for, you know, three decades, and anyone who doesn't call me that, you know, I mentioned, I tell people that the only one that calls me Michael or Mike is my wife of nearly 30 years when she gets angry, so I keep it that way. My family has,
you know, you're in trouble then.
Exactly. We have three consecutive generations of military academy graduates in the family. My youngest son, who, God willing, will graduate next month at the Air Force Academy in Colorado Springs, the United States Air Force Academy, is the sixth member of my family to go there. My father is a distinguished graduate from the Naval Academy at Annapolis. I'm an honor graduate or magna cum laude from the Air Force Academy myself. And we have about 120 years of combined active duty military service in my immediate family, from every conflict, you know, every major combat engagement the country's been in, from World War I to the current so-called global war on terror. I'm a registered Republican. I'm a lawyer and a businessman, and was minding my own business when Mel Gibson came out with his now infamous movie in February of 2004, I should say controversial movie. I forget the name. I think it was called The Jesus Chainsaw Massacre or Freddy versus Jesus. I'll propose, since of course today is Good Friday, it's Mel's take on the crucifixion, which deviated in numerous significant ways from the gospel. It's of Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, and you know the movie seemed to lack everything. Had everything except for a car chase, so which is fine. That's part of you know what America is all about: freedom of expression,
First Amendment rights.
Exactly, but it's not fine when you're essentially being ordered at the United States Air Force Academy as a cadet or staff person to go see that movie. I found the movie to be, there isn't a word for it, it's beyond offensive, and there are others that I know that are very good friends of mine who just were crying with joy with the movie, which is fine, but ultimately, that was the first notification that there was a spot, a cancer spot on the liver, and as I began to look at this and look more closely at it, I brought this to the attention of the Academy. My wife and I have given a lot of money, time, blood, sweat, and tears to the Academy over the years, because for me it was a transcendent place, and I did have a very bad incident that happened my first semester of my 4 years there, but that was an anomaly, and I never really faced any anti-Semitism before that incident, but that was clearly an anomaly. What we were seeing now is something, I love the way you talk about connecting the dots, because most Americans, you know, the most number of dots that they'll connect would be the dots that indicate enough personal initiative to be willing to spend, I don't know, three chilly nights on an air mattress in front of Circuit City to make sure they can get their PlayStation 3 in the morning. And, you know, we can't do that anymore. We are facing essentially an imperious, fascistic contagion of extreme, what I call the weaponized gospel of Jesus Christ that's being that was set up by people like you mentioned, Reed and many others, Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, D. James Kennedy, the former, you know, Ted Haggard, who is, you know, has fallen off the radar scope after imploding, Dr. James Dobson, and focus on the fascists, or I guess I should say focus on the family. Roughly this group that we're fighting, and I come to you on your show today with the gun smoke in my face as a man at war leading a legion against this group. And the legion is, you know, my foundation, the Military Religious Freedom Foundation. And on the web, mm-hmm. it's easy to find it at www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. I'll promise on the show I'll just use this term one time, but the actual technical name of the people that I'm fighting, it's not Christianity, it's not even evangelical Christianity, because we have many evangelical Christians that support what we're doing. It's called premillennial dispensational reconstructionist dominionist fundamentalist evangelical Christianity. Long term.
Well, that's the first time I heard that.
Yeah, that's the problem. They know who they are. It's roughly about 12.6% of the American population, so you're looking at about 35 to 40 million. And these are people that believe that they have an illimitable right to push their particular biblical worldview, irrespective of any time or any place, which, of course, flies directly in the face of our Constitution, our well-established case law, and everything else. I mean, it's bad enough, you know, if you're at a private corporation or if you're, you know, and this happens. But, you know, we're basically telling the United States military, which is, let's not forget, the technologically most lethal organization ever created by humankind, with, you know, with our honorable and noble, you know, sailors, soldiers, Marines, and airmen. This particular group of people, you know, headed up by the idiot we currently have in the White House, they basically turned the Pentagon into a Pentecostal-gon, and they've created turned our military into a faith-based initiative. And we're saying is, look, is that at least it's going to be constrained, at least to the degree that our military will be, to the same degree that a shift manager at Starbucks or Walgreens or Wendy's or McDonald's is going to be constrained. You can't push the gospel on your employees. If you want to see a Fortune 1000 CEO brought to his or her knees, you have the most junior employee in the mailroom raise their hands and say, I'm going to my lawyer. I'm being witnessed to about the gospel of Jesus Christ. I'm being proselytized. I'm being evangelized during the workday. Any lawyer is going to realize that that is a killer lawsuit. Any CEO will understand that. It's a direct violation of Title VII of the U.S. Code. You can't use mm-hmm. the employer-employee relationship. But what I would submit to you, and in your concept, Melinda, of connecting the dots, is that the dots are much bigger. It's a trillion times worse in the U.S. military, where your boss is not just your boss, it's your military superior. In the U.S. military, having sexual intercourse with someone other than your spouse, adultery, is still punishable as a felony. I've tried and defended those cases. If your military superior tells you to go to the base dentist at 4 p.m. and you don't go, it's a felony. You know, so we actually have regulations at the Pentagon that prohibit superiors up and down the chain of command by name from not pushing Amway and Mary Kay Cosmetics and Tupperware on subordinates for fear of the impact of what we call the draconian specter of command influence. So you can imagine how difficult it is for a junior enlisted person or officer, when they're even being gently evangelized by a superior, to say, get out of my face, sir or ma'am, because they can't do it.
Well, yeah, but there's actually two other issues here. One of them, of course, is they're doing that and they shouldn't be doing it, but there's actually an agenda, because what they want is absolute complete compliance without the consideration of whether or not one is a member of the military is acting appropriately in other contexts. They want they're trying to convert the military into a different kind of organization.
Well, let me make it real clear. Here's a couple of numbers that if you're listening audience can follow. This will be a great victory in and of itself. There's two numbers to remember that are attended to connecting these sets of dots. And those two numbers are 737 and 132. 737 and 132. We now have 737 U.S. military installations that the Pentagon admits to. We know the real number is closer to 1,000. We're garrisoning the planet, that are scattered in 132 countries around the world. And on every one of them now, we have an Officers Christian Fellowship, the OCF, for officers, and a Christian Military Fellowship for the enlisted, a CMF. You understand the difference between an officer and enlisted. A lot of people don't.
Yep. Okay.
And they have a tripartite goal, a three-level goal, that their members, which are everywhere, up and down the chain of command, view as far more important than the oath they all swore with their hand, you know, raised to support and defend, protect and preserve the Constitution of the United States. And these three goals, right on their website, number one, they all want to see a spiritually transformed U.S. military. Number two, with ambassadors for Christ in uniform. I stress the prepositional phrase, in uniform. Thirdly, empowered by the Holy Spirit. What we're basically facing here is a Christian Taliban that is every bit as much an internal national security threat to this country, equal in magnitude, width, breadth, and impact as that presented externally by Al-Qaeda.
Well, even, or perhaps even more so, because it's so much larger, probably.
And Al-Qaeda, to our knowledge, doesn't have nukes. You know, my book, One Man's War, whether with God on our side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military, is exactly that. I mean, the governor of New York, Eliot Spitzer, is fond of saying that you cannot change the world by whispering. The book is meant to be a primal scream. You know, it's at Barnes & Noble's, it's at Borders, it's on Amazon. It's a quick read, and it'll scare the crap out of you, and it's meant to. It's absolutely astonishing where was our country? Where was everybody on Tuesday, July 12th, 2005? Because on that day, on the front page of the newspaper, most reviled by the Pentagon, and what do you think that newspaper would be? The New York Times.
Yes, that would be it.
Right, the number two ranking chaplain in the U.S. Air Force, Brigadier General Cecil R. Richardson, made the astonishing statement, front page of the New York Times, so you know that it had to be fully vetted at the Pentagon, that it was now the U.S. Air Force's official policy to, quote, reserve its right to evangelize anyone it determines to be unchurched. Now, my wife and I, having three kids on active duty in the U.S. military, our daughter-in-law, who's Christian, married to our older son, who's Jewish, and they're both graduates in 2004 from the Air Force Academy, and our youngest son is still at the academy, as I mentioned, we raised our hands and said, excuse me, Air Force, we have three kids in uniform right now. We demand to know, do our three kids fall on that Richard Nixon-era enemies list of being, quote, unchurched that you have? And if so, are you or are you not? We demand to know. Tell us. Are you going to exercise your reserve right to evangelize them? But that isn't all. Connect this series of dots for a second. How many times have we heard of Osama bin Laden or Mullah Muhammad Omar, the resurgent Taliban, the insurrectionists, the jihadists, Sheikh Hassan Nasrallah from Hezbollah, Hamas, the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades, Islamic Jihad? They refer to all of Americans as invading American what? Imperialists and crusaders. And yet, we are making the statement that it's the Air Force's policy to evangelize anybody that it determines to be unchurched, as if that wasn't enough. We have an attack F-16 squadron in the Air Force at Cannon Air Force Base in my home state of New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
They're called the 523rd Crusaders. Their official Air Force patch, as if we needed to connect any more dots there to make sure that the people we're fighting understand who we are, has a giant crucifix on it. I can't make this stuff up. Put on your seatbelt. A giant helmet from the 11th century of a crusader and a giant broadsword. The helmet is surrounded by three yellow stars in the shape of a cross for the Trinity. Now, most Americans know that there's a big rivalry, say, between the Washington Redskins and the Dallas Cowboys, or the Boston Red Sox and the New York Yankees. What would it be like if the manager of the Yankees, Joe Torre, 3 days before he goes to Fenway Park in Boston to start a four-game series against the Red Sox, what would happen if he called the mothers of the Red Sox players whores? You think that might upset the balance, might motivate the others a little bit more? So when we're sitting here, and could we possibly be doing anything greater to act as an accelerant or lubricant for angry young Islamic men and women in Jordan and Egypt and Syria and Lebanon to want to come join the cause against us? Could we be doing anything more to embolden them rather than calling ourselves crusaders with the policy that we reserve the right to evangelize anybody out there? It's unbelievable, and it's infused with this end times concept. If we want to bring on Armageddon, we have to help Israel control the Middle East, because that's a little box we check, and then Jesus comes back, and according to our reading of the book of Revelations, hallelujah, the blood runs hip deep, and we're all happy.
Well, of course, the whole thing is entirely unconstitutional, which is the first issue. The fact that they're doing this at all is completely appalling, of course. But have you traced back when they started this?
Yes, we have. It basically, interestingly enough, We have found that the real fork in the road, or the if you will, the rock in the middle of the stream, occurred with the end of the draft in 1972. Because when we had universal service, the military was pulling in people, at least in theory, you know, diversely from all parts of the country. And number one, so you got people that were coming from what we would now call blue states and not just red states. Many of them were pissed off having to come in to begin with. And, you know, a spoonful of sugar would not necessarily make the evangelical Jesus go down that easily. We ended the draft in 72, and we started pulling almost, you know, very significantly from, you know, the red states, where patriotism has often been mixed with, you know, with Christianity. One thing
that's always
another,
been the case, because those tend to be southern states, and a lot of the American military has always been southern.
With the draft.
Well, that's true, not with the draft.
Right, and then and so that ended, and then one thing led to another, and it's hard, even during the 8 years of the Clinton administration, and I'm a Republican who voted for Clinton twice and would vote for him again. Because there was estrangement between the West Wing and the Pentagon, the military tends oftentimes to look inwardly for itself, and they believe they have this noble calling. And, of course, like you said, ultimately my fight, you know, that I'm leading, you're right, it's all constitutional. This is not a complex meal. We are not, for instance, Chateaubriand. We're a hamburger. We're simply saying there is a time and a place you can spread your gospel of Jesus Christ. There are so many times and places, even in the military. We have thousands of chapels. I was married in a military chapel at the Air Force Academy, the largest university cathedral in the world. It's a famous structure, the Air Force Academy Cathedral. We have thousands of chaplains. But there are going to be some times and places that you can't do it. For instance, you can't do it during the duty day or duty night when you're on duty to a superior, to a subordinate that is powerless to say no to you, because that's something that violates the U.S. Constitution. And
it could be like rape.
Exactly. Now, in fact, we use the term spiritual rape. And generally, just like, you know, measles or pneumonia or a cold or flu have symptoms, there are four specific symptoms, indicia of a dominionist Christian. And any one of them is good enough to find one of them. But you generally find all four when you look hard enough. It's like walking into, you know, I live in New Mexico. We call large ditches out here arroyos in Spanish. It would be like walking into a deep arroyo or ditch here in New Mexico on a hot July day and having your nose filled with the stench of the rotting corpses of 10,000 swine. That's what it smells like. But here are the four stench things. The first would be extreme homophobia. The second is misogynism, you know, the hatred of women, or that women should be doing nothing but selecting food, preparing food, serving food, cleaning up after the meals, and staying pregnant and raising children. The third would be virulent anti-Semitism. And the fourth is the subordination of what they view as, quote, man's law, just, you know, the Constitution, to the higher goal of their version of the weaponized gospel of Jesus Christ. And wherever you find these things, for instance, at the Air Force Academy, I'm embarrassed to tell you, do you know what one of the most popular jokes was in 2004 and 2005 when I got there?
What?
Tell me if you've heard this one. Why did Jews make the best magicians, Melinda?
I don't know.
Apparently Jews make the best magicians because they have the magical ability to walk into a red brick building and come out the smokestacks in a puff of smoke.
Oh, my God, that's disgusting.
My children were being called at numerous times and numerous places at the Air Force Academy effing Jews and Christ killers and accused of total complicity in the execution of Jesus Christ. We had bus incidences where cadets who were Jewish did not want to have to listen to the virulent, you know, dominionist Christian radio stuff on buses while they had no choice but to be on them. And the bus was stopped, and the bus driver told them they could get off if they didn't like it. I can go on and on. When Focus on the Family, you've certainly heard of them and Dr. J. Dobson. When they opened up their campus, which was right across the street from the Academy in 1993, the Air Force the Air Force Academy assigned its famous parachute jump team, the Wings of Blue, to parachute down out of the azure blue Colorado Springs skies, and I can't make this stuff up, carrying the, quote, keys of heaven. They landed on Dr. Dobson's front lawn, gathered up their parachutes, and marched in formation and presented the keys of heaven to him.
That's a little bit bizarre.
Well, it's not just, you know, I mean, it's indicative of the fact that the whole concept is supposed to be, you know, we have hundreds of moles in the Pentagon, people that support us, that are terrified to come out. And they make it very clear that we are not in the AOR, which, by the way, is the acronym that the Pentagon uses for Iraq and Afghanistan. It stands for Area of Responsibility. We are not there for any reasons that are geopolitical at all, even oil. we are there for the fulfillment of the biblical prophecy of the book of Revelations. And if you haven't read
that certainly seems to be the reason that the evangelicals are there. Different people can have different things. I'm sure the petroleum companies view it differently.
Oh, I'm sure people think differently, but they're telling me that the main thrust, I'm sure everyone can believe that they're there for different reasons, but the concept is they want to start the bar fight. We want to do whatever we can to explode and to initiate this end times concept. You know, and look, the bottom line is this, is that at the end of the day and at the middle part of the day and in the early part of the day, it just seems that certitude in the afterlife is simply completely incompatible with tolerance and respect in this life. And that certainly holds true. But the difference is in the military. We have all the battleships, all the bazookas, all the tanks, all the bombers, all the nuclear missiles, and that's the problem here. And it's not just a problem. This is not. I'm not coming to you today, like Al Gore and An Inconvenient Truth regarding, you know, we're at a critical tipping point for global warming. We have tipped the constitutionally mandated wall separating church and state again, in this technologically most lethal force ever created. And not just church and state, but supernatural and natural. That wall is now, as I speak to you today, nothing but smoke and debris.
Well, let's go back to an interesting point that you brought up earlier, that this started in the early 70s. And then most of the churches that you're talking about, how did they get this culture into the military academies? Did that happen? Do you know how that happened?
You know, it's hard to trace it. It's really hard. We know that, for instance, in Colorado Springs, you may be familiar with the fact that that's often referred to as the Protestant Vatican. Over 100 of the nation's largest evangelical organizations are centered there. I mean, you have the New Life Church and the Navigators and Focus on the Family, even Cowboys, you know, for Christ. And so at least from that perspective, the nexus is pretty obvious to see. But the rest of it, it's difficult. It's the Chaplains Corps, by various estimates, is 70 to 75% evangelical at this point. And as I said before, you know, I've had senior people in the military look at me and say, Mikey, come on, you're one of us. Why are you fighting us? You know, if you had the cure for cancer, wouldn't you want to give it to our beloved troops? And by saying that, they don't even have the mental wherewithal to realize that they're calling my faith, the Jewish faith, or any faith other than their dominionist evangelical Christian faith, which still, you know, including the vast majority of Christendom in this country, just non-evangelical Christendom, they're calling it a cancer. They've looked at me and said, Mikey, Dr. Seuss, Gandhi, Albert Einstein, Jack Benny, Anne Frank, they're all burning eternally in the fires of hell. Don't you know? Don't you understand? We're trying to make sure that doesn't happen to you and to all of our troops. And my response to them is very right on point. Just listen to me. If you want to believe that Anne Frank is burning eternally in hell, that little girl who walked into the hermetically sealed gas chambers with a Nazi Zyklon B gas, and that hermetically sealed gas chamber turned her little 13-year-old body into a convulsed purple and blue polka-dotted corpse, which was then shoved into the crematoria. If you want to believe that your version of the gospel of Jesus Christ has her burning eternally in the fires of hell, I will give my last drop of blood and my last breath to support that view, and I will commend my three children in the military to give their last blood, drop of blood and their last breath to support that view also. But I will not do that when my government tells me who are the children of the greater God and who are the children of the lesser God, Melinda, because I've been there, we've all been there, done that. We've seen this train leave the station over and over and over and over again over the last 2,000 years whenever a virulent version of Christianity has engaged the machinery of the state. That's the words we use with our U.S. Supreme Court. We have not ended up with little creeks, streams, rivers, or ponds, or lakes. We end up with oceans and oceans of blood. We have seen the train leave the
station.
The train goes to Slaughterville.
Well, yes. And in this particular case, of course, the political agenda there has been in place since the same time, the early 70s. Actually, I don't know if you're aware that Ralph Reed and Pat Robertson and Karl Rove and Jack Abramoff were all in the same Young Republicans chapter.
Oh, no, of course
and
I know.
They
that.
Actually
I mean,
planned
I'm done,
this
I'm
out.
You know, I spent 3.5 years as one of President Reagan's six lawyers in the West Wing of the White House. I was H. Ross Perot's general counsel. I just left his employ this past September of last year to go focus full time on you know our military religious freedom foundation. You know, so I spent 11.5 years in Washington. You know, I've practiced law in some of the largest law firms in Washington and New York, and you know I was doing other things. but I can't do other things now because I've seen this. I see what's happening, and I know that today is April 6th, 2007. I can make a strong case that it's really April 6th, 1937. Now, remind people very carefully of those famous words from Sinclair Lewis, who was the first American to ever win the Nobel Prize in Literature. He won it for a book he wrote in 1935 called It Can't Happen Here, referring to fascism. He went over to Nazi Germany for a few months in 1939 to personally observe fascism. He came back to America, and of course he was kind of like a rock star because finally we had an American who won the Nobel Prize in Literature. And he was asked, what did you see over there in the Third Reich? And he said, let me tell you what I've seen. He said, I saw fascism up close and personal, and not if, but when it comes to America, it will be wrapped in the American flag carrying a cross. And about 14 years later, during the middle of the Cold War, General Douglas MacArthur made a famous statement that symbology was very important to our American fighting machine, and that our American fighting men and women, the two most important symbols were the cross and the flag, because they teach us how to live and how to die.
Really, that long ago?
That's right.
Huh. I didn't know if you ever read science fiction or if you read any of Robert Heinlein's books, but you know he made this prediction too in the 50s.
Yes, I've read a number of Heinlein things. Science fiction is one of my favorite genres. But the problem is that you go back to Orwell, George Orwell's famous statement that when you face universal deceit, speaking the truth itself can be a revolutionary act. Well, I submit to you that we don't teach our young airmen, soldiers, sailors, and Marines, or midshipmen at Annapolis, or cadets at West Point, or the Air Force Academy, we don't teach them to be revolutionaries. They're supposed to salute and follow orders, to provide good order and discipline in a powerful military unit, to give up many of their own constitutional rights in order to form a powerful, you know, military unit through the concept of good order and discipline to protect the full panoply of constitutional rights for the rest of us. So it's too much to ask them to speak truth to power when you're under this heavy, vertically encrusted system that we call the military hierarchy. It's very hard for a lieutenant to tell a major, stop. For a three-striper to tell a five-striper, stop. But what do you do, like in my book, With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military, what do you do when my daughter-in-law, a Christian, is told by a one-star general, and she's a cadet at the Air Force Academy, she's told by a one-star general to go out and harvest non-Christians to bring them to the New Life Church, Ted Haggard's church, for the annual Passion Play.
That's bizarre.
Not bizarre. I would argue.
Well,
that
tell
it's
us some more about what's happening at the Air Force Academy. So this sort of thing is happening simply routinely. And
well, I want to be careful about this focusing. Remember now, it's going to morph. I've been in this fight 39 months. It initially happened at the Air Force Academy. Now, when you ask how is the Air Force Academy doing, I can argue that it's following the flying donkey concept. Are you familiar with that concept, Melinda?
The flying donkey? No. Tell us about
it. Yes, when a donkey flies, you really don't expect it to stay up very long.
Well, that's certainly true.
They know that we're looking at them, and they're out there. But the bottom line is that we still have this. All of this stuff is still going on there, but it's going on all over the U.S. Military. We get calls. We've roughly had 4,000 calls from tormentees in the U.S. military. And get this, here's your sea change for you. 95 to 96% of them are Christians. Roughly three-fourths of that 96% are traditional Protestants, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Episcopalians, Methodists, Assemblies of God, even Baptists. The other one-fourth will be Roman Catholic. The other 4 or 5% will be Jewish, Islamic, Hindu, Buddhist,
Wiccan.
Muslim. They'll be Wiccan. They'll be atheists. They'll be agnostic. This is basically evangelical Christians praying, P-R-A-Y and P-R-E-Y, on non-evangelical Christians, telling them that you may think you're a Christian, but you're really not Christian enough. And as a result, you're going to be burning eternally in the fires of hell along with the Jews.
Well, that's certainly appalling. And so people are calling you, they're asking for relief, and you're, of course, dedicated to making sure that they get that relief. So what are you doing to help them? I know you must
well, again,
be doing
Well, again, they're
something.
Not asking. They're begging. The Military Religious Freedom Foundation, and I'd like to give the shameless plug again for your listeners. Go to the web.
Yes, definitely, shameless plug.
www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. That'll take care of everything you want to see there, or the book, everything goes to the foundation, with God on our side, one man's war against an evangelical coup in America's military. We do two things. We educate the media and the public, and we litigate. We're a militant organization. That means that there's no discussion with the other side. I mean, there's a war, and we are not going to bring a knife to a gunfight. So our job is to kick ass, take names, lay down a withering field of fire, and leave sucking chest wounds on those that would take desolate our beloved social contract, which is our beautiful Constitution. And we form a dagger with our litigation strategies, and we stab repeatedly at this unconstitutional heart of darkness that is resident not in the vast majority of Christians, and not in the majority of evangelical Christians. But in this group, they're called Dominionist Christians. Pat Robertson, Jerry Falwell, the ones that we talked about, the ones that will stop at nothing but having a Christian theocracy in this country. They've turned the Pentagon, like I said, into a Pentecostal gun, and they've turned our U.S. military, the Marine Corps, the Navy, the Army, and the Air Force, into a wretched, hideous, faith-based initiative.
Mm-hmm. Well, you could. I certainly wasn't aware of this, and I don't think most of us are, because we don't necessarily have any military in the family. You wouldn't hear about it if you didn't.
No, I've been on every radio show, TV show, magazine. It's amazing. The trouble is that unless you're Britney Spears and shave off your hair, or you're Anna Nicole and you die, it's very hard to get out there. So we've had features in the Washington Post, we've been in the New York Times. I'm in a movie that's about to come out. We have a movie now based on the book that's being made.
Is that going to be general release?
Yes.
Is that general release? Okay, great.
Yes. And Americans need to wake the hell up and look at what's going on. I remember we lost the matriarch of our family about a year ago. She actually lived here in Albuquerque. She was a Holocaust survivor. In fact, Spielberg took her testimony, video testimony, as he's done for the Holocaust survivors. She was 91 when she passed away. It was my great aunt Herta. About a week before she passed away, I went to see her. We all knew that she was a very tough lady, but she made it through the Holocaust. And then it was her camp was liberated by the Russians, so she had to live under Russian occupation at the end of World War II for 5 years, and so she was able to get away to San Francisco, where she lived for 40 years, and then finally here to Albuquerque. With about 6 or 7 days left in her life to live, I visited her, and she was aware of the fight that I was leading, and she said, I can't affect her Yiddish, German accent, but she said, Mikey, don't stop this fight, because I remember when we were living in Berlin in the late 30s, when the first pronouncements came down from the Third Reich, that all Jews had to have the same alphanumerics on their license plates for their cars, and we didn't do anything. We didn't pay attention. And then the next ones came down saying that Jews could not gather in groups of more than 100. We did nothing. And then the number dropped to 50. Could not gather in groups of more than 20. Pretty much it got down to 5 and then 3, and then you couldn't gather at all. So as she said, you cannot. It reminded me so much of the T.S. Eliot quote that the end of the world shall come, Melinda. The end of the world shall come. The end of the world shall come not with a bang but a whimper. And then I'll never forget how she stood up in bed, because she was very angry at our family because of the thing that we did to her. We took her driver's license away when she was 88 because she was just too old to drive anymore. She was very angry with the family. We drove her everywhere, but she liked driving. We couldn't, and she was so angry. I asked her after she gave me that warning about Nazi Germany and not to give up the fight, if she would forgive the family for taking her driver's license away. I knew that she was dying, and she knew that I knew, and she knew. And she got up on her elbows, and she had piercing blue eyes. She pointed at me, and I said, "Why were you so upset at us when we took your driver's license away?" And I'll never forget what she said. She said, "Because when you're a Jew, you have to be ready to get away." And here's a 91-year-old woman still worried that she has to get in her car and get away from fascism, from totalitarianism, from groupthink, from someone saying.
Well, I know it must have been hard on her to lose it.
Yeah, but the point is, you see the point that I'm talking about, the poignant aspect
of
it?
Yes, of course.
She's still worried, and that's why we have a constitution like this. Our founding fathers were all too aware of Cromwell and in England. They saw what had happened in Europe, and they wanted to make it very clear we were not going to have any sort of a state religion, and at the same time, everyone could be completely free to practice their religious faith. So, I know the religious right thinks that the separation of church and state is a myth like Bigfoot. But, leave those 16 golden words in the First Amendment out of it. I mean, this is where that dynamic tension is set up between the Free Exercise Clause and the No Establishment Clause. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. forget the fact of the First Amendment, which is the first part of the 10 amendments of the Bill of Rights. Just stay with the body of the Constitution. Most American lawyers have long since forgotten that even clause three, Article 6 of the body of the Constitution. Do you know what it says?
Why don't you tell our listeners?
It says we will never have a religion test for any position in the federal government. They made it very clear. It's exactly what it says. So you tell me that when D. James Kennedy or Jerry Falwell or Pat Robertson or James Dobson comes out and says you should vote Christian, you tell me how that isn't suborning sedition or treason.
Well, it is, of course. But I don't think most Americans were aware that this was going on because you have a sort of a closed culture in the military.
Yes,
and you'd
have
this work, it would have to be in a closed culture.
And remember, and many people, unless you're looking for it, you can't necessarily see that it's there. It's the whole concept, if you read 1984, of people saying, hey, this is just the way it is here. We've created the fastest way in the military, when you're in a very, very, again, draconian Spartan system, the fastest way to go from zero to hero is to accept a particular biblical worldview, which, by the way, ends in cataclysm and blood for everybody. If you go to the Southern Baptist Conventions, Taj Mahal headquarters, you'll walk in and you'll see in their lobby a giant MOL. Do you know what that stands for?
No. What's it stand for?
The map of lostness. It shows the entire globe, and wherever the color red is, those people are lost and going to hell. And it covers 94% of the globe. You know, that's what they believe. They have a right to believe it. But let me tell you, you were talking about demographics. Let me give you an interesting stat. In 1970, Melinda, in this country, we had only 10 mega-evangelical churches, with a mega-evangelical church being defined as 2,000 or more members. But after 9/11, with this idiot in the White House, we have had a new mega-evangelical church open up in our land, in our country, every 48 hours.
How bizarre.
That's their right to do it. It's perfectly fine to do it. But and in fact, they even have the right to try to engage the machinery of the state. But it's the responsibility of our government, our state, to rebuff that. Because if you don't want separation of church and state, or supernatural and natural, then I invite you to go live in the kingdom of Saudi Arabia. If you don't want it, go live in North Korea with Kim Jong Il. Because we are not a Christian nation, despite what the religious right says. And I can show you a document. Our first international treaty, you know, it was the Treaty of Tripoli, Libya. It was with an Islamic entity.
That's right.
In 1797, and it was actually negotiated by President George Washington. It was unanimously ratified by the U.S. Senate, and then it was signed by the second president, President John Adams. And the first two lines start out saying, the government of the United States of America is not to be considered in any sense founded upon the Christian religion.
Well, yes, of course it does say that. And that's always been the point. The point is you have an absolute separation of the state and religion in America. And they had very good reasons for doing that.
Right, and you completely – people are constantly referring to me as Satan, you know, Satan's lawyer, the Antichrist, that godless secular leftist. Pat Robertson, I think, called me – somebody, one of them called me the most dangerous man in America, the antagonizer of all Christians. And then they settled on a new name about 40 weeks ago. I don't know how much they paid their PR firms to come up with this, but they call me the Field General of the Godless Armies of Satan. And my response, as I said before, is I'm not trying to take away your warm, cuddly Jesus teddy bear. What I'm saying is that there is a time and a place you can do this. And you have so many times and places I can't shake a stick at it all. You cannot, you know, just like we won't even allow you to use your position of military superiority to push Tupperware or Amway or Mary Kay, as we said earlier. We're certainly not going to let you try to push, you know, your particular version of religion. I mean, the Air Force actually has a core value that they tout. Their religious core value says that religion is a matter of individual conscience, and that military professionals, especially commanders, must never take it upon themselves to try to change or coercively influence the religious views of subordinates. And they completely ignore that core value.
Well, then that's, of course, something they should do, and there should be an accountability for having done it. And I assume that what you're doing and what you're offering people is some protection in that regard, right?
Yes. If they're willing to come to us, you know, and we've been very careful, very, very, very careful to ensure that we do not in any way, shape, or form ever reveal anybody's, identity. Because of the thousands who have come to us, only 112 will let us even tell their stories anonymously for fear that the military authorities will take the fact patterns, even from anonymous fact patterns, triangulate them and determine the identities of these people, and then screw them and their families. Now, interestingly enough, of the 112 that have come to us, only 8 are Jewish. You know, we have one agnostic, we have one Muslim, we have a dozen Roman Catholic. All of the rest are Protestant.
Uh huh. Protestant Christians who simply aren't evangelical enough for the evangelicals.
Right, and as a result, you know, they will with John 3:36. If they don't have a personal relationship as it's interpreted by John 3:36 with Jesus Christ, they're going to burn, you know, they're going to be cast to the hell eternally. The Dominionist Christians will point to Luke 19:27 in the parable of the pounds, when Jesus says, "Go out among the people and bring back to me those who will not let me, who will not permit me to be king over them, and slaughter them in front of me." It's there.
Mm-hmm.
They take it seriously. The same way they do Matthew 12:30. If you're not with me, you're against me.
Well, and, there wasn't anybody exactly transcribing it when he was walking around, so it's really hard
to know what he said. I'm still trying to find to get the videotape. You know, my point is that whatever you want to believe is great, but you cannot make this. You cannot create this environment. You certainly can't do it at Walgreens, Burger King, McDonald's, or Wendy's, right? You can't do it at Starbucks. You think
we're
going to do it?
We shouldn't be doing this, and it's ridiculous. So what you're doing is you're taking these things to court and you're litigating them, and which means, of course, you're filing charges against the U.S. government.
Yes, against the Pentagon, and we have stories of members of the of soldiers who come back from the war zones who are literally captive audiences in their hospital beds in the VA that are screaming for nurses to come take the evangelical chaplains away who will not leave their bedside trying to convert them.
Well, that certainly should be actionable. That's horrifying. So
it is.
Have any of these cases been litigated yet?
We are in the process of bringing yet another case. We tried our first case, and we got kicked out of court because, you know, it's very hard to get standing. I came in and put my name in there as an American citizen, but taxpayer standing is a technicality. We had 4 young lieutenants that had just graduated from the academy, but the judge came back and said, well, now they're lieutenants. They're not actually at the academy anymore. So, we're trying to get people to be emboldened enough. It's very hard to sue your own employer, particularly if you're in the U.S. military. But we now have the most powerful, prestigious, and largest law firm in Washington, D.C., handling our legal law matters pro bono, which is fantastic. And just keep watching the news media. I mean, what do you do when you have a 3-star general commanding almost 70,000 troops, and all of our aircraft, the fighters and bombers, with all of our nukes except for the nukes in the silos, ordering his battle staff to put together a PowerPoint presentation? You know what that is, right? Showing the direct comparison between showing the direct parallels, as he sees it, between the Book of Revelations and all of our movements into Crete, Mosul, Fallujah, Sadr City in the northwest part of Baghdad itself in Afghanistan, and wanting all of the members of the command to see it. Do you understand the astonishment of something like that, the shock of something like that?
Well, yes, that would be very shocking. Any of these things that you're talking about would be very shocking.
How about
this
one? How about a force? How about the most senior general? What about a 4-star general that sanctions the distribution of leaflets in his command building? He commands 65,000 troops, so a 4-star general. The leaflets advertise an off-base class at the local mega evangelical church entitled, again, I can't make this stuff up, Jesus versus Muhammad, an examination of the life of both prophets and why Jesus Christ is superior to all. Again, can we possibly embolden our enemy, the people that we're fighting, and make it easier for them to recruit than what we're possibly doing now?
Well, no, of course you couldn't. When these things do get to court, I assume that you're going to make sure that they are absolutely covered so that people can see what's going on.
We have professional public relations people. We have 3 sets of them, but it's an expensive fight. You know, and right now my wife and I have provided most of the money. We have professional fundraisers in place, which is why I'm making an appeal to anyone listening to this program. Go to the website, www.militaryreligiousfreedom.org. You know, I don't care if it's 50 cents. You can make a donation. It's fully tax deductible. We're an IRS-approved 501c3 nonprofit charity. But we are here. We're in this fight. We're in it to win it, and it's a war. It's a war, look, Martin Luther King said it best. There comes a time when silence becomes betrayal. You have to make a decision. You need to take a side.
Absolutely. I certainly agree with you. If you had to say something to the people that are doing this to, and so using America's military, what would you say to them?
I would say continue to do this at your own peril, because we will ferret you out, we will sue you, and we will expose you to the American people, because I still believe that that the American people can recognize when felonies against democracy are being committed, as they were with the situation with the 8 fired U.S. attorneys. The lead of whom is David Iglesias, who lives 5 minutes from me here in Albuquerque, one of my closest friends, who's a devout, born-again evangelical Christian, right-wing Republican, who has completely supported us in everything we've done. I would say that, you know, your days are numbered, but we're not at the tipping point. We need to expose this to the American people. Look, I know that the religious right would love for me to be viewed as no pun intended, but a Northern California Chardonnay sipping, you know, tree hugging Sierra Club member, bleeding heart liberal Democrat. I'm not. I'm a Republican. I spent 3.5 years as a lawyer in Reagan's White House. I managed the Iran-Contra investigation as the committee management officer. I was Ross Perot's general counsel. My family has a long, long history of military service, including, like I said, 3 straight generations through the military academies.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm seeing this, and I'm seeing what's going on. The best metaphor I can give, I don't know how old you are, but I know that I'm old enough to remember in the late 1960s, since I'm a big science fiction fan, there was a Quinn Martin production, a TV show, I think it was on ABC. It was on for about 3 years, and Quinn Martin is the same guy who did The Fugitive and also the FBI with Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. The show's name was The Invaders.
He did good work.
Yes,
mm-hmm. Yes,
called
I remember
Invaders.
That.
And there was one actor, the actor's name was Roy Finnis, and the premise of the show was that he was aware of the fact that there was an extraterrestrial invasion of planet Earth, and that the aliens had taken human form, but for some reason they had trouble replicating the little finger of the left hand, so he could tell who they were. And so for 3 years on Tuesday nights on ABC in prime time, he ran around just doing 2 things. He was, A, fighting the alien invasion, and number 2, trying to get the rest of America and the world to wake up to let them know that it was happening. Well, that's
mm-hmm.
me. The actor Ed Asner... one of our biggest supporters is the actor Ed Asner, and Ed actually played the father of Barbara Hershey on 2 episodes of The Invaders, so that metaphor he really gets. But that's what it is. We're being invaded, and you A, need to understand it's happening, and B, help us fight against it.
Well, and the people are going to go to your website, and I know that they're going to be helping you, because
and
this
I
is
hope
something
read,
all Americans need to get on board with.
Yes, and the book itself, like I said, the book is a quick read. With God on Our Side, One Man's War Against an Evangelical Coup in America's Military. It's St. Martin's Press. It's on Amazon, easily gettable there, Barnes & Noble, Borders. It's a 209-page book, not counting the appendices, and it's the real Halloween. It's scary. It's meant to be a primal scream as to what actually happened, what actually went down that led to the discovery of this massive battle that's going on. And it's, you know, mm-hmm. as I said, we're trying to get America to wake up from its, you know, somnambulistic walk and realize what's happening. If this show is, you know, I think a part of the reason, you know, your show is here, Melinda, is to create a little anxiety. And quoting Soren Kierkegaard, anxiety is the dizziness of freedom. So embrace the anxiety. You know, we're so happy, we're so joyous that we can get dizzy being free. But that comes a little anxiety and a little bit of responsibility. And, I can quote Machiavelli that the darkest places of hell are reserved for those who maintain their sense of, quote, neutrality, particularly during times of moral crisis. Let me assure you, we're in a major moral crisis. It may be too late.
Well, that's certainly true in many, many ways and in many different arenas right now. This is certainly one. It's a very major one, and Americans need to look at this and think about what they are going to do. I want to thank you for being with us today. This has been incredible, and I just urge everybody to buy your book and to go to your website and to help in any way that they can.
Well, I sure appreciate it. It's been great being on the air, and I'm just so happy that there's a show such as yours available for people to listen to.
Well, thank you so much. You take care.
You're
and,
welcome.
You too. Good night.
Night.
And that's our show for today, Friday, April 6, 2007. Here at The Spiritual Politician, we're working to help you find the ideas that make our world a better place. Government is a tool. We need to use it the way that it was intended that it be used. On this show, as we do with all our shows, we end by reading the section of the Declaration of Independence that is America's mission statement. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that when any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it is the right of the people to alter or to abolish it, and to institute new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and happiness. Prudence indeed will dictate that governments long established should not be changed for light and transient causes. And accordingly, all experience has shown that mankind are more disposed to suffer while evils are sufferable than to right themselves by abolishing the forms to which they are accustomed. But when a long train of abuses and usurpations, pursuing invariably the same object, evidences a design to reduce them under absolute despotism, it is their right, it is their duty, to throw off such government and to provide new guards for their future security. This is Melinda Pillsbury Foster coming to you from BBS Radio. God bless the journey that brings us to freedom, and may God be with you every step of the way. Good night.